Broadcasting from the Washington, D.C. studios of the National Right to Life Committee, this is Pro-Life Perspective, America's pro-life voice. And now, here's National Right to Life President and Pro-Life Perspective host, Carol Tobias.
Yesterday, we began an examination of a commentary from the late bioethicist Ronald Cranford. He was a vocal advocate of withdrawal of food and fluids in high-profile cases, which Cranford and others argue is merely an attempt to honor the patient's unexpressed, quote, right to die. Today, we'll take a closer look at an article published in the Western Journal of Medicine. To be accurate, Cranford did not explicitly say what should be done with patients labeled as being in a minimally conscious state, or MCS. But judging by Cranford's history of advocating euthanasia and suggestive illusions, minimally conscious state likely will prove to be a label slapped on a huge new class of cognitively impaired patients for whom providing food and fluids is, at best, optional. There are some very interesting points in Cranford's article titled, What is a Minimally Conscious State? First, there is a candid admission that the diagnosis of persistent vegetative state is not nearly as clear-cut as we are always told it is. Many medical and ethical controversies still surround the vegetative state. Physicians have noted an unacceptably high rate of both false positive, patients were incorrectly diagnosed as being in a vegetative state when they had some evidence of consciousness, and false negative. Patients were thought to have some degree of consciousness when, in fact, they were truly vegetative diagnoses. Second, the reach of so-called right-to-die cases has now swept into its grasp patients who clearly were not vegetative but were otherwise severely neurologically disabled. As we mentioned yesterday, the case of Robert Wendland involved just such a man clearly not in a persistent vegetative state, a man who had shown small but definite improvement, but whose wife wanted to withdraw his food and fluids because, as she said to the Sacramento Bee, he would not want to live that way. In the Wendland case, Cranford tells of a meeting that took place in Aspen, Colorado, of the Aspen Work Group. But while Cranford was comfortable with the consensus-based definition of MCS and medical criteria for its diagnosis that emerged, the attempt illustrates the underlying philosophy of pro-euthanasia arguments and their fatal flaw. An individual's worth and dignity are based on arbitrary standards that are as changeable as the weather. In his article, Cranford made important distinctions, such as the range of behavior and capabilities a patient such as Mr. Wendland can display. In so doing, he also made clear that there are real differences between someone supposedly in a persistent vegetative state and someone who supposedly is in a minimally conscious state. But having done that, he goes out of his way to dehumanize these people, claiming MCS patients are unable to perform any meaningful activities of daily living and unable to communicate meaningfully. And while they are able to experience pain and suffering to some degree, often the actual degree of pain and suffering cannot be determined. Proud of this new category of targets, Cranford concluded, just as the first quarter century of the Right to Die movement may be exemplified by the medical, legal, and ethical assessments of brain death and the vegetative state, so the first quarter century of the new millennium may be the era of patients who are substantially neurologically impaired but conscious to a variable degree. Perhaps MCS will capture the essence of this next wave. The next wave is a tsunami. At the time, the Aspen Work Group estimated the number of minimally conscious state patients in the United States to be 112,000 to 180,000. Among this next wave are large numbers of patients who are senile or suffering from Alzheimer's. During his lifetime, Ronald Cranford advanced a worldview that severely disabled patients are unworthy of care and medical treatment. We need you to help stop bioethicists from carrying on Cranford's legacy.
You've been listening to Pro-Life Perspective from National Right to Life, the nation's largest grassroots pro-life organization. For more information on today's episode and to get involved, visit our website at www.nrlc.org.